a passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver. Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times, where we're changing the world, wait for it, one Om at a time. So, as always on the Dr. Kevin Show, we want to remind you it is a live call-in show, so that means that you can be part of the conversation. And you do that by calling in at 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-57. If for some reason you're not a callee kind of person, but you'd still like to share a thought, ask a question, participate in today's stimulating and wonderful hour of me beating the guest up, I mean, me interviewing the guest, then you may also go to facebook.com/mydrkevin. You will see the post at the top of the Facebook page, and you can just put your comments there, your questions there. The only requirement that we have is that you must be respectful. That's it. You can disagree. You can have a whole different idea of how you see the world. You can do all of that as long as you're respectful. If you're not respectful, we delete your post, we hang up on you, because it's all about respecting that everybody gets the right to have an opinion, just like you do. So that being said, we're going to start, as we always do, with my hot topic. And then the poor guest gets dragged in who has no idea what it is and is expected to talk about it. You know, it's my favorite part of the show. And then I'll introduce today's guest, and we'll put him through the Dr. Kevin paces. So the first thing is, so Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, he has now been charged with the Espionage Act if we happen to have him transported from London to our very good old U.S. of A, who would like to have a piece of him. Just like London had a piece of him. Just like somebody else, there's another country that wants a piece of him for an old rape charge, actually. Nothing to do with his wild ways. But a big discussion is, does he afford the rights of a journalist? Is WikiLeaks a form of journalism? And should he have some kind of special privilege? And, you know, it's very interesting because I'm trying to decide how I feel about this. I did not come to a conclusion. As many of you know, I wait till the very last minute to decide what my hot topic is going to be. And usually it's right out of the, I think it's crap, I think it's great, isn't this wonderful? But, you know, you break a law, and you broke a law, and somehow journalists get a pass if we decide that it's juicy enough or the story needed to be told bad enough. But they still broke a law. If anybody broke into the military base, you know, the database, the information, the codes that he helped Chelsea Manning break into, he was complicit in getting information that was considered classified. And because the two of them decided that the world should know it, does that mean that somehow the fact that they did commit an illegal action not be prosecutable? I'm not sure. But I think that tonight's guest is probably going to have an opinion, because I know tonight's guest and he has an opinion on everything. Tonight's guest is Dr. Rick L. Mask, a self-declared humanist and author of Social Capital 2.0. So I'm going to ask him, what kind of social capital does he think Julian Assange has? So just so you know, that's coming. Has been actively involved in business and education for more than 10 years. He is currently the Associate Dean of Business and owner of his own company, Independent Consultant. In addition, Dr. Mask is a public speaker and member of the Nashua Chamber of Commerce's Legislative Advocacy Committee. and he's passionate about the future of communication and the relationships that exist in our world. Rick, welcome. How are you?
Dr. Kevin, good. How are you, sir?
Well, you know, I could be a little bit better than I am, but then everybody would hate me because I'm so good. So, you know, I try to leave a little bit of room to not, you know, what can I say? It's tough being this great. So, tell me, Julian Assange, is he a hero? Is he a criminal? And should we have the right, should journalists have the right to break the law and we say it's okay because they're journalists? What do you think?
Well, we live in an interesting time right now, Dr. Kevin, because the issue is we, first off, don't have a global governance for what information really should be or shouldn't be available. And I only say that because you have to think about it from the corporate side of things, whereas in such as Facebook takes our information readily, does whatever they want to with it, even things that I'm sure anything we clicked when we signed up did not agree to. And they use that to manipulate us on the individual level, on a broader social level. And they're not trying to prosecute it at all. You know, I think Mark Zuckerberg had to go make a statement, you know, and basically got even less than what I'd consider a slap on the wrist. So I'm not sure if the reporter, journalist rules apply as much in protection of him as just the generic scope of the world we live in and how readily available information is. Now, I do believe he committed a crime. It was supposed to be, it was, you know, private information. It was information that was classified. In that regard, a crime was committed. But I really think that we need to look at precedents, not only for these individuals, but for what companies are doing as well, and really try to come up with a dialogue around the ethics, around limitations for this the internet age that we find ourselves in. This manipulation of data, this leaking of information of individuals, it happens every single day. But it just so happens when it happens to a government and it lets information loose that they're not really comfortable with letting loose, then it becomes a problem. But when it happens to the vast majority of citizens of this country, nobody gives a damn.
Okay. So he's guilty of something, but if we're not going to prosecute everybody, why should he get prosecuted alone? Is that what I heard?
That is correct, Dr. Kevin.
Okay. Well, if he really wants to move to a hero territory, he could break in and see if he could get Trump's tax returns and release them. I think that that might, you know, even his crime out. What do you think?
I think it would definitely appease some people that are targeting him right now. That's for sure.
Targeting him. Oh, now there's an interesting way to put it. That are targeting him. Yes, because he's so low profile and keeps his head down and doesn't walk around basically wearing a target that's full of more hot air than a Zeppelin. But, you know, but that's beside the point. So moving right along, we've got your opinion. We've got your thoughts on our thing. So I'm going to have you start. And, of course, I made the mistake of picking up your book and beginning the process of reading it. I'm not going to say that I got all the way through it. But, of course, the whole time I'm reading it, I'm hearing your voice in your head like you're reading it to me. I'm like, oh, God, I can hear him say this. Oh, yeah, I can hear him say this. But define social capital. You have a book called Social Capital 2.0. And even though it's 2.0, it's a first edition, so there's a little bit of a conflict there, because how do you have a 2.0 that's a first edition? But we'll let that go, you know. what is social capital? And why would my listeners be concerned about it, and how does it affect them?
Well, there's been a lot of conversation the last few years around emotional intelligence, and I respect those conversations as they really do point out some great qualities that human beings possess in order to understand other people and be empathetic toward other people. And social capital is really a measure of how well we utilize our emotional intelligence, because it measures the intangible relationships that we have with those around us. Now, it's been used in several different arenas in different ways and had different constructs applied to it. But in my book, in my research, I use a pretty agreed upon three set constructs for social capital, which is structural capital, cognitive capital, and relational capital. And structural capital is literally the environment we find ourselves in, and the processes that we use to govern either in business or govern our lives. Cognitive capital is our ability to gain knowledge, communicate that knowledge, and collaborate with others. And then relational capital is actually the relationships that we have with other people and how we cultivate those and build trust over time and things like that. So all of these things together equate to what social capital is. And like I said, it's the measure of how well, honestly, that we communicate with others and then harbor relationships with others.
Okay, so the first kind of it is structural capital, and that's basically in the workplace how dysfunctional is the hierarchy.
Yes.
And then we have cognitive capital, which is do you have enough common sense to communicate your intelligence in a way that's going to actually help other people get it?
There you go.
Okay. And relationship capital is building trust, loyalty, connection, and having people that actually would want to have some kind of relationship with you other than the minimum amount of communication that one has to do in the workplace. Now, corporations over the last couple of decades have really tossed to the lions a lot to do with trust, honor, loyalty. Let's get rid of 100,000 workers so we can give a $10 million bonus to our CEO. Do you think that there is a lot of relationship capital between employees and employers in corporate America today anymore? And is any of it functional? What do you think?
Well, the problem is that as a society, we've kind of been conditioned to maybe not be okay with giving $10 million, bonus to a CEO while people are starving that work for the company, but we've been conditioned to be more accepting of shallow relationships. And the reason why I point this out is just because of social media and the detriment that's actually come from its existence. A lot of studies initially focused on social media would say that it helped people to build social capital because it helps you to connect with a mass amount of people. But later in the game, years down the road, since social media has actually got, at least 10 years behind its existence, it's starting to come out that whereas it connects you with more people, it connects you with more people on a shallow level versus the face-to-face communication that was so prevalent in years past where we had deeper, meaningful relationships with those around us. So that disconnect that we're feeling, I believe it has shifted to our understanding of the corporate world. And when people genuinely think of the leadership of these corporations as being separate than them, in a different place than them, they don't try to – they just apply that shallowness they feel in their life and their relationships to the shallow feelings they have at work. So it's kind of, like I said, conditioned us to be okay with having that non-caring relationship with our workplace.
Well, I mean, I usually start with my guest with where do you want to take our listeners outside the box? But we backed into that because this is a perfect outside the box. That you know, what social media has done has given, basically given the papal blessing to almost make people be pathological liars, because nobody knows the truth. They can be 6 feet tall, and they can be handsome, and they can be in shape, and they can be brilliant, and they can be intelligent, and they can be sitting there with Google and be 5'2", 450 pounds, and couldn't put a sentence together if you actually talked to them, and you'd never know the difference.
Yeah. I really feel like it's just applied that iceberg mentality. Social media lets you be the tip of the iceberg and then hide the other part. You know, usually they use the iceberg metaphor for something positive, you know, like hard work. You don't see all the hard work. You just see the success at the top. But social media lets us give a tip of the iceberg view of ourselves to the world.
Yeah, I don't think the Titanic was so thrilled with icebergs. Just saying. So in this, though, I don't know. I feel like there's a cart horse thing going on here, and I'm going to completely own the fact that I may be not hearing you correctly. I think that the faux friendliness, stab you in the back in a heartbeat, only care about the numbers, middle and upper management of corporate America, laid the foundation for social media to have people accept that, you know, false relationships. I don't think I heard you when I heard you, I thought you said it the other way around, like social media made it okay. But I think corporations have been screwing us for decades before as people. As a people who should be treated like a human that actually has needs, desires, and a value just in their humanity. So we'll come back and see if I heard you backwards. Maybe my dyslexia has moved to my ears. We'll be right back with Dr. Rick Bask, the author of Social Capital 2.0, the first edition, mind you.
Conscious media for conscious minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times. Remember, we are a live call-in show. We are talking about social capital today, among other things. It's going to be a wild and woolly ride because today's guest is a wild and woolly guy. We have on today none other than Dr. Rick L. Mask. He is the author of Social Capital 2.0, and he is also the Associate Dean of Business Owner. He's Associate Dean of a Business School, owner of his own company, Independent Consulting, and more. If you'd like to find out more about Dr. Rick Mask, you can come to facebook.com/mydrkevin. Make sure you like my page when you're there, because I'm a likable guy. Just go with it. Just go with it. Don't challenge here. I'm a likable guy. So just like my page. Or you can find out more about him at linkedin.com. I've got all of his links right there on the Facebook page. I'm looking for an easy one. Oh, INDCON.com. INDCON.com is a place that you can contact him at. You can go to Amazon and find his book. And again, call in, be part of the conversation, 202-570-7057. So were my ears being dyslexic, or did I hear it the right way?
You did hear correct. But I do agree with you, Dr. Kevin, that, you know, I feel like workers have been getting screwed for years and years. I just feel like our new generation of workers that's entering the workforce, Generation Z, whatever you want to call them, I feel like they have even more to combat with because of social media conditioning them. It's a different place, you know, and we would think that it would expose injustices more, but I think in some instances the conditioning has made it where we're, for lack of a better term, just more accepting of, like I said, the shallowness that we're experiencing and the lack of care.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that we as a society, as a social, have been slipping deeper and deeper into apathy and depression for a good couple of decades now. And I think that you are watching that, you know, social media is at times addictive. It's a kind of addiction to wanting to have a life that you don't know how to get, that you may not have the tools and skill sets to create, that you don't have the self-confidence, self-worth, or self-esteem to establish. And I think that it is at the core of a lot of the issues that we're facing in this country today. And I put it right back on 1950s onward media, whose main goal was to destroy self-worth and self-esteem. But that's your cue. Speak. Hello.
Yes, sir. I can. Can you hear me?
Dad, we're listening.
All right. So yes, I totally agree. I mean, to me, any situation where we can see two or three or four companies controlling it in the business world equates to me that we've got a situation. And we've seen nothing from the 1950s forward but a reduction in the amount of companies that are controlling media in this country and worldwide, for that matter. And because of that, we are getting – fed the same crap from every single source, and there may be a different spin on it or a little bit of a different take, but everything is coming in to bring us to a certain place, a place that I feel like the media and anybody in control of that wants us to arrive at. Just like with the Julian Assange thing, I think it's proven that, you know, individuals are not allowed to get away with such crimes, but corporations can. And that's okay.
And yet we've made decisions that have said that corporations can function as people until it's time for them to be held accountable.
Exactly.
Yep, yep. So let's move back more into social capital. I know I've kind of been throwing a lot of curveballs at you, but I know how you like to catch, so.
That's okay.
So – in this part of the segment of the show, I like to ask people what truth would you like to expose? And it could be about social capital. It can be about anything. I don't care what it is. But what truth would you like to expose to my listeners that if they actually got this, if they understood this, and they applied it into their life, that they would be living a better life because of it?
I just want people to understand that, and in Facebook, I'll target it directly. They are being played by social media, that when they scroll through their news feeds, they are being fed bias information to appeal to them, just to fatten the pockets of Facebook and get people to buy a bunch of shit that they don't need. And these polarized views that you're feeling, this is not the way the world works. This is a smoke and mirror situation, and it's sad because it's purported on an individualistic basis. Every single person is exposed to it every day. And with the fewer and fewer physical conversations, face-to-face communication conversations that we're having, we're getting further and further polarized. These biased perspectives that we've created, and it's being fed by algorithms. And we're getting further away from true human connection and the true meaning of being an individual and understanding others in our society. And technology used for this purpose has overridden its usefulness and its intended purpose, which is to be a tool for human flourishing. And we've got to draw a line in the sand and say, you know, we need an ethics council to govern AI, machine learning, and all these things, so that we can stop chasing technology for technology's sake and actually go back to living and understanding what humanness is, what, you know, the things that make us human. And we get that from face-to-face relationships, deep connections with other people, so we can show empathy and sympathy and understanding. And as long as we let our Facebook feed deliver that connection for us, we're screwed.
So that which was created to be a tool has become a tool.
Yeah.
That's what I heard you say.
It's become a tool for evil.
Yeah. But, you know, that whole saying about when you talk about somebody being a tool, it's not a compliment.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, I have often said, I promote my business, the work I do, and causes I believe in through my social media. I posted my wedding pictures. That was like the last time I got hyper-personal in anything, was I posted my wedding pictures. And that's because it was the easiest way for a lot of people who were there to want to get my wedding pictures. But I don't do my personal life on Facebook. And I often say that if I wasn't in a business where it was so important to promote myself through social media, I don't know that I'd have any social media accounts at all. So my question for you now is, you have pointed out this poison pen, this poison pill that we're being fed every time we bring up our Facebook feed or our Instagram or our Pinterest or our Tumblr or, you know, whatever. What do people do about it? There is a lot of world that ends up only being connected if it's on Facebook. And I am awful at the fact that I had people that did not come to my wedding because I did all my invitations through Facebook, and there were people that had started checking out of it and never saw the invitation. And I thought I was being, you know, like practical and, you know, so what do we do? How do we cut social media out without cutting out some of the real people that we have on social media, maybe the 10 or 15% of our numbers. You think that's a high quote?
I think that's pretty accurate. And honestly, it's just got to be handled on an individual basis. I mean, the greatest thing that we could do is and have them, you know, have no ad dollars being able to be created, and we should just step away. But I mean, I even live far away from where I grew up, and I like to keep connected. Look at I'm very active on there, but I use them kind of to the same purpose you do. I try to promote my business, but positive things as well, and just things that I think are neat and interesting, and things that I want to share from. I think that the thing that we have to do as a people, citizens of this country, the world, to tell Facebook and tell other social media sites that we're willing to accept a monthly fee. Now, believing that they are the customers of these social media sites, and they're not the customers at all. The ad companies are the customers, and we are the cattle, basically, that are being fed to the advertisers. If we would be comfortable with a small fee every month where we became the customer, or if there was a social media platform that existed this way, things could be a lot more controlled to our actual needs and wants versus us being at the whim of the highest bidder. And I think that if we can move toward at least that, where we're actually willing to pay $1.99 or whatever it is a month, we'll find ourselves in a lot better space if we're not comfortable with a mass exodus scenario, which myself included, I don't know many people that are.
So we're a bunch of rubes proving that P.T. Barnum was correct. There's a sucker born every minute, and this minute might just be yours. And in a world where people, I mean, so how are you teaching your children how to have social capital? Because social capital, and I know I happen to know you have children. I hope you don't mind me mentioning it on air.
No, not a problem.
Because social capital is all about life. I mean, we put it in a framework of business, and the book is more business oriented about social capital and how to use your social capital. But if social capital is everywhere, there's no place that you're not spending or purchasing or dealing in some kind of social capital. Is that a true statement?
That is a true statement.
So how are you teaching them to not deal in counterfeit capital, which is what social media is? It's counterfeit. It's counterfeit capital.
What
it's
I try to
money.
Do is have
fake money.
It is. what I have them do is I try to have them involved in as many extracurricular activities as possible. Children from different backgrounds and meeting people constantly to be comfortable with being around new, unique individuals daily. And then individually, one of my children asks me a question, I make it a point to not only provide my singular perspective or my bias. So if you take a conversation about religious beliefs, I will respond to that question to my children from as many different backgrounds, as many different areas of the world as I possibly can, to try to broaden their perspective and limit and biases that they may be forming. I want to stamp out anything I can for them that would hinder them from having genuine relationships with others. And I also, do not promote social media with my from them viewing me on it to me talking about it. I don't had not introduced them to it at this point in their lives. And neither one of the younger ones are double digit in age. And my oldest son is away from me, so I have less control there. However, I definitely am limiting their exposure to that as much as possible.
Okay. Well, and you bring up an interesting point, which, you know, has been a point Broadway, of all places, has addressed several times through several different musicals, which is children will listen. Children must be carefully taught. And I really think that there is a malfunctioning piece of DNA in a great many parents I come across who don't understand that if they're social media addicts, no matter what they say to their kids, they're teaching their kids to be social media addicts. If they're not welcoming diversity but staying in a very limited lane, they're teaching their children to be in a very limited lane. We've known this. It's been discussed for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And yet every crop of parents that I come across in my business, in my life, whatever, I watch them role model all of the worst behaviors, but think because they said something else that that's what the kid's going to do. Thoughts?
It's the true statement about children being sponges and picking up everything, and they do. And 80% of communication is nonverbal. So your 20% worth of statements you make to them is shadowed in comparison to the 80% of nonverbal cues they're picking up on.
Okay. So, again, I know we're going to be going to break in a second, and then you'll get off this hook, and I'll hook you on another hook when you come back. Oh, and there's the thing. I didn't get my last question in. Okay. We'll be right back with Dr. Rick L. Mask, author of Social Capital 2.0, here on the Dr. Kevin Show.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay. 911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the last segment of the Dr. Kevin Show. We're here with Dr. Rick L. Mask. Dr. Rick, are you there?
I am.
I am. Oh, sorry. It always goes back to Broadway with me, sooner or later. It's got to. Okay, Dr. Rick here is the author of Social Capital 2.0, You can find it on Amazon. You can find more of a write-up on him at facebook.com/mydrkevin, M-Y-D-R-K-E-V-I-N, where him and all of the places you can track him down are listed in there. And remember to like my page when you're there, speaking of faux social media. And doesn't stop me from promoting. You can find out also more about him at www.indcon.com. So just think of it as I-N-D-A-con. No, I am indeed a con. Huh. Is there an artist there somewhere missing? No. Also, you can join our conversation by calling in at 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-7057. If you are listening to this as a repeat, because this show does get repeated and then it gets thrown out into the universe, and you think, I wished I had been listening live. I really would have liked to ask Rick this question, or maybe Dr. Kevin even. You can go to the Facebook page. You can post the question. I will hunt the guest down, hold them up by the ankles, and shake it out of the top of their head. Okay, Rick?
I'm good. Yeah. Party time.
Party time. There we go. So this is our What a Load of Crap segment. So what load of crap do you want to expose in the world today? It can be in any field, any topic, anywhere. This is your time to get it off your chest.
I just really feel like it's a load of crap that we're still dealing with a standard 5-day work week. It has not been addressed since the 1930s. The fact that you're being told that that is the best that can be done, and all of these people are being forced to work 55 hours a week in retail and manufacturing and everything else. We have the technology and the automation. We have improved efficiency beyond belief, to the point where it is a load of crap that we're still working 5-day work weeks. This efficiency that's been created should be passed down to the workers and not just used to profit the companies. I also think it's a load of crap that more people can't have the option to follow their passion, and they're being forced into jobs that they really don't care for at all to get by. We are at a point in our society where we can do things that would help disrupt this. We could have people doing things they love to do, which just drives me crazy every day when I examine the workplaces that people find themselves in.
Well, and it's interesting. You know, there's always one of my regular I have a monthly co-host who has his own 5-day-a-week radio show out of Manchester. I should hook you up with him. You should be on his show as well. He does a drive-time show 4 to 6. But you have to go into the studio for that. But Matt always says to me whenever we're talking politics, because he's a lot into the politics stuff, it's like, follow the money, follow the money, follow the money. And, you know, as long as we continue to support a system where stockholders are given to expect unreasonable rates of return that lead to things like cooking the books, making inhumane choices, doing all sorts of things, and that we have this, you know, I remember a long time ago writing an article and talking about how the fact that people can talk about how socially conscious they are and how blah, 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 but look at their stock portfolio, because their hands are all bloody by making money off people that are inhumane to their workers right here in America, let alone Thailand or where Indonesia or wherever. So how do we go about them not saying, well, hey, we're going to make it more efficient and cut the workforce by 25%. So our stockholders will be happy and they'll get a couple of extra shekels while they're busy running around telling the world how fabulous they are and what humanists they are. How do we do that?
I have honestly a very sad statement to make here. I feel like as focused on human capital, human relationships as I am, I feel like in certain ways automation is going to play out. And my best advice, though, in saying that, is that everyone should find their passion in places where humanism exists. Things that make us human, those skills are valued for whatever job choice that you make. Because humanness is something that I feel can't be duplicated. I also feel like it gives you more opportunity as far as flexibility in your schedule might go in some instances, not in customer service retail, however. But just find humanness, grasp onto that, you know, that lead you in that direction. Because I feel like innately, I think everybody has an innate want or need to help other people. And I could just be way too overly optimistic with that, but I really feel like we do. So I feel like if people would focus on jobs where they're doing that, it would be killing two birds with one stone. You would be finding a job where you would have a job even through this automation crap. And also you would be furthering humanity in some way. You would be helping other people. I wish I had a better response than that and say that there's something we can do to limit this hyper-technological, you know, advancement we're seeing, this over-automation. But until we have a global ethics council to address if we actually should be doing these technological things, they're going to continue being funded by large corporations that have no concern for you, me, or anybody that's listening right now.
That has no morals. Speaking of listeners, we have a listener. I'm not going to try to pronounce your last name, Sam. If you really are interested in his last name, you can come to facebook.com/mydrkevin. I want to share his comment, though. He said, I know of some places that offer 3-day work weeks. They reward you by taking away your weekends and make you work 3 12-hour shifts. 5-day work weeks seem to be our forever doom. And that's a very interesting statement because when I was leaving corporate America and starting my own business 29 years ago, I opted into a place where I could work 3/12 because it gave me 4 days a week to build my business. And I looked at it as the perfect transition schedule and actually worked 4/12 when I needed to as my business was doing it, as a lot of new businesses do, stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. So I'd pick up an extra shift here and there and do that. And so I just wanted to throw that in. But I think that it's the magic number. I don't even think that it's about 5 days a week. It's like what made 40 hours the magic number? What made it, you know, could we come up with a pricing system that says this job has this value and if you get it done, this is what we're going to pay you for it. And we don't care how many hours it takes. Now, some things obviously, like you've got to have somebody behind the register. You still, you know, you can have as many speedy checkouts as you want. You're never going to walk into a store where there's not some human there because there will be humans that you can't trust walking in. Unless we get to a futuristic thing where you can only go in with an eye print and a thumbprint and then cameras are watching you constantly. And if you steal something or do something, then the police just show up at your door. And I say this and you laugh, but I fear that we could head in that direction if we're not careful. Thank you for your comments, Sam. Is it 5 days a week or is it the 40 hour? Which is the biggest bang? What do you think?
I really think that it should go to a post-capitalist place like you were referencing, where we have, you know, a skill that needs to be done. We have a job that needs to be done and whatever, you know, however long it takes you to do it, you still have a method of pay for that. Or even, you know, contributions to society being rewarded where we do multiple things in a day. So maybe in the morning I go up and help with legislation in Concord, New Hampshire, and then I go help out at the college and perform duties as a dean, and then maybe I go volunteer at the Boys and Girls Club, and that contribution to our society is what I get paid for. So it's based off of merit, like you said, rather than a time scale.
Well, you know, the human race is interesting and diverse. And I definitely am one of those people that has moments where I love humanity and I hate people. but, you know, there will always be those who will take advantage of any system as much as they can for any number of reasons. And, you know, and there, I don't think that humanity is capable of no accountability. I think that we are always going to have some kind of accountability in it, in what goes on. You know, one of the things I like, and you and I talked a little bit about this at when we had breakfast, is because I'm a big fan of Mayor Pete, who's one of the Democratic contenders for president. And one of the things that he said talked about freedom and how that, you know, freedom has been constantly held by the Republican Party as freedom from regulation, rules, stuff like this. And he said, but there's no freedom if you cannot leave your job that you hate to start a business because you have to have the health insurance. That's not freedom. And mm-hmm. some of the things we have to put in place is to say, you know, if we have jobs that people are doing that we could automate, then we also need to create a system where they're not punished by having to work 3 part-time jobs to make the mortgage, and to empower people to say, hey, what are your gifts? What are your talents? Create a society where the machines are doing the drone work, no pun intended, but people potential is being supported through the national program supporting them that then create more wealth, more taxes, more dollars, and that will pay for itself. But then you lose the slave mentality that profits the top people in corporate America, that supports some of the most wealthy, and definitely supports our political system. They have to have people enslaved in order to survive. So how do we do it? How do we change a system that inherently has ridden off the backs of slaves, whether we call them slaves anymore or not, but has ridden off the backs of slaves since, oh, I don't know, Cleo was offering a grape to Mark Antony.
We have to make a conscious decision to make relationships and communication important, because that's the only way that we'll ever be able to work together. And I think that social media is just one of the many tools that's trying to discourage that deep relationship that it takes to make great change, because relationship, there is no empathy, and without any empathy, there is no concern for other humans or human life in general. So if we can't make a conscious effort to reconnect with one another and make that first step as individuals, we're going to keep going down a very, very dark road.
Well, and we've been down this dark road before. This is not the first time in humanity we've been in a dark road where we have had inhumane people in charge with way too much power. And that destroys anything that threatens it. You know, we have had horrendous dictators. We've had the dark ages. We've had periods where anything that is enlightening and empowering is immediately oppressed, because the people in power won't stay in power if people become empowered. And so we have to look at our relationship with power in all of this as well. Not only our relationship with each other, but our relationship with power and how we give our power away to it, and how we idolize it and we put it on pedestals. We have to look at how we teach it and how we teach the very nature of what truly is power. Because some of the greatest social capital in the relationship form is the power one person can have over somebody else because of the relationship, and whether they're going to use that to empower the person or unempower the person. Thoughts?
I think, like I said, it's just, if we do make those individual efforts, though, we can have that collective voice. Because one of the greatest political pressers of all time, the pressers to make change, is the collective voice of the people. And no super PACs or anything have been able to make some of the substantial times came from social movements and collective voice.
Yeah, sooner or later, all dictators get overthrown. But I think that we have to make intrinsic changes in everything from our communication systems to our accountability systems to our educational systems that allow dictators to be replaced by dictators sooner or later. Dr. Rick L. Mass, author of, and I guess I almost got through the whole show without doing that, Social Capital 2.0, INDCON.com, or you can find the book at Amazon. Dr. Rick, thank you for being on the show. You'll have to come back and play again sometime.
Thank you, Dr. Kevin. Have a good night.
Night.